Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
Get us better away? Now, Charlie. Welcome to Suplexes and Cervezas with Chavo Guerrero Jr. I'm your host, Chavo Guerrero Jr.
Good morning, everyone, and thanks for jumping on the podcast today. I'm looking outside. It's looking, again, like another beautiful Southern California day. Sun's just getting ready to peek out. Looks like I may be able to get up on the driving range right now, the golf course, and go hit some balls and go frustrate myself. Hope you all had a great Mother's Day also, and you got to spend it with your loved ones, your mamas, your wives, your daughters, all the awesome women of the world that make this world go round. I tell my kids all the time, I go, as much as I love you, I am incapable of loving you as much as your mama does. So you better treat her right, because that's the person that is in your corner more than anybody else in this world. So treat those mamas right, guys. Today on the podcast, I have one half of, in my opinion, and a lot of people's opinion, one of the greatest tag teams in pro wrestling of all time, and that would be the Rock and Roll Express. And my guest today is Ricky Morton. He's a guy that I grew up with watching and remembering the stories that my father told about him and their escapades together in different various territories and getting in the ring and really just tearing it down, and the way wrestling used to be, where they would wrestle 8 times a week. It'd be every day and then twice on Sundays. So my father and Ricky and all the guys from those times just spent so much time together. They were always on the road. It was like a constant guys trip. So it was always hard for them to transition back into reality when they went home and stayed with their families, because the fact that you're so used to being on the road and being with the guys all the time, something that I definitely understood a little bit being in WWE and WCW and then coming back home and having to transition back into reality. And it's tough sometimes, but that's something that we talk about on this podcast, and all the just fun, good times that they had, the great wrestling, and how much each one of the boys, the wrestlers, the boys meant to each other. We talk about how tough it was to get into this business back then, and they'd really just beat you up until they realized that you could be trained and you're tough enough to make it in this business. So I'm very, very proud, very happy to be able to sit down and have a conversation with one of the greats in the pro wrestling industry, a guy that was considered to be one of the best good guys, the best baby faces of all time, and just had so much fire in that ring and could really, really tell a story. Him, along with his partner, Robert Gibson, still today considered one of the best tag teams of all time, if not the best tag team. So without further ado, I bring to you Ricky Morton. Please subscribe to the podcast, hit the like button, and help keep us on the air, bring you bigger and better guests. And definitely check out all the past episodes. I got some really great guests on here, and it's like being in the car, traveling down the road on a road trip with me, Chavo, and one of the other crazy wrestlers that this business brings together. Again, here we go with Ricky Morton.
Ricky Morton, what's going on, brother? Thanks for being here.
Man, I want to tell you it's an absolute pleasure for me having you having me on your show. I get this right in a minute here. I got to tune my voice up here. Down. Let me get it right here. And man. I told Robert not to call me.
Look here,
he's calling me on the phone. Go talk to him back there. All right. I told him don't call me that after I do this thing with you. So what's happening with you, my friend?
Oh, brother, man, I'm just doing this little podcast thing here. And, you know, what's going on with you, man? I see you kind of everywhere, still out there just rocking and rolling and stuff, huh?
Man, I got to. That's keeps me alive.
Yeah, I know.
You right? know what I was – I was watching the thing the other night on the with Roddy Piper on the AEW.
I saw that.
And the first guy popped up was Chavo, your dad.
Yeah.
Wow, man. I went, holy crap. I forgot Chavo. He used to tell me about
they're married for a long time, man. So the reason why we had moved to California, you know, we were originally from El Paso, Texas.
Yes.
But, my dad moved. He got a shot to go wrestle for, you know, Mike LaBelle at the Olympic Auditorium in like 1975, late 74, 75. And he came down there, checked it out, and then goes, okay, guys, they offered me a job. You know, what should I do? So we moved for 6 months. It was 6 months what it was going to be. That we were going to go back to El Paso, but we never left. Like, he just ended up killing it, you know, and doing really well. And he was their little golden boy for a little bit. And this young punk named Roddy Piper came in, and they made some good money together.
Yes, they did. They did real good. You know, your dad was my friend. You hear me? We did a lot of things together. I tell the kids all the time, you know, and they don't see what's wrong with our business to me is people don't understand it. They think it's just getting your shit in. And I hate that. You know what I'm saying?
I
tell them all the time. I says, guys, listen, go back and watch some tapes of Chavo Guerrero and Hector and Amundo. You know, I met Amundo before I met any of them.
Oh, yeah.
My first territory I was ever in was in Hawaii. And
yeah,
I went there.
Here, that's right.
I'm right out of
Morocco and was there, right? And
Larry Sharp.
Some of the Harps were there, I think, right?
You know what? I can't remember back then because we were just all young kids,
right?
But Amundo, man, me and him, you know, we hung out together. He was cool,
oh, yeah?
man. Yes, hell yeah. Me and him had a hell of a time together. But to get back to say what I was, you know, Chavo, he was the first one that I ever see do a moonsault, but he didn't do it off the top rope. He did it off the top of a cage. And and I never forget that. He told me to lay still. I went, what?
Don't move.
Yeah.
Stay.
And it wild. I mean, but see what I'm saying? But he put his spots into the story of the match.
Right.
You know, nowadays, do high spots the whole match. And then, you know, shoot him out like a cannon, and the finish will be a small package. So what the hell?
Yeah, you know what? That's what I'm seeing today. It's very much a lost art, for sure. There's getting less and less people being able to teach it. And what I'm watching is that people, they use these moves. They use the moves. That's the story of their match, the moves. But the moves help tell the story, but the moves themselves are not the story.
Yes.
Like an explosion in a movie. If you look at a movie, explosions, they help tell the story, but the explosion themselves is not the story.
And I got you.
And I remember one time when I first started wrestling, and WCW was my first territory, you know. I was young, dumb, you know, they brought me in. And I had a match with Dean Malenko, and it was like a Monday Nitro. And Paul Orndorff pulled me aside and goes, hey, kid, don't just rely on those moves. Don't just rely on those moves. And at first I didn't understand what it meant. Later on, I see what he's telling me. Hey man, it's a story. We're telling a story. The moves help tell the story, but they're not the story.
Yes. I got you there.
And I think that's what's missing today, right? Do you think you see that?
Well, you know, I have a wrestling school. Okay. Travel. I don't know if you know School of Morton. I have a live.
What's the name of it? School of Morton?
Yeah. I have a live YouTube show every Sunday.
Where is your school at?
It's in East Tennessee. It's in a little town called Chucky, Tennessee. That's not but two buildings. Yeah, one okay, of so them's
anybody listen? Anybody listening? I first thing I tell people is to get trained correctly by a reputable person. So if you're in close to Tennessee, go to Ricky Morton and get trained. You will learn this business correctly.
Yeah, I have sure. I've been there for almost 10 years. We have a live YouTube show that comes on every Sunday on School of Morton YouTube.
It's, oh, wow.
You know, at 5:05. And we we actually do good. You know, it's not, don't get me wrong, it's a YouTube show, but
that's great.
It learned. Oh, yeah. And it's keeps me young, too. Before we get really started here, I jerk to that other limb, what's up with that 64 Impala?
63, but 60. So that one on,
is that a 63?
So the one that I just had on my Instagram was a 64. That was I did an appearance and they had somebody, you know, came like a car club that we drove. But I have the original one that me and Eddie came on TV with. The original.
I remember
one,
that.
It was you know, when we first started, it was out of the blue. We did it at a pay per view in Worcester, Massachusetts, and it was green. And we ended up doing it. And then after. About 6 months later, John Cena bought it. So John Cena had it. Then when Eddie passed away, John Cena gave it to me. I completely had it frame off restoration, you know, completely redone. I mean, you can eat off the bottom of it. Like that's how.
Oh, wow. You know, so I'm a car.
Are you a car guy?
I'm a car guy. Hell yeah,
oh,
I
nice,
am. But,
nice.
But I'm a Chevrolet guy.
Chevy, baby.
Yeah, man. Too, yeah. Hey, come on. I'm not making fun of you. Chevy.
Chevy.
Yes,
guy.
Sir. No, you know, man, I do. I go to a lot of car shows. You know,
oh, really? Oh, good. I didn't know that.
Oh, hell yeah, buddy. I was just they had a great one down here in Pigeon Forge not long ago. Me and my wife, we got a little place down there up in the mountains, too.
Yeah.
But sure. We went down, man, we just had a ball going up and down, seeing those cars, man, and the low riders and all, you know, everything.
Something about a classic car, brother. There's something about it that it's just, man, they don't make them like that anymore, you know?
Oh, no. You know, and when they made them like that, I could work on them easy. Fix them up. I mean, exactly. You got to have a college degree now to change the plugs.
You got to have a computer. You got to hook it up to the computer and see what's wrong with it. You know, back there, I can hear what's going on. Okay, it's missing. You're probably your spark plug or your time is a little off. Something, you know, it's pretty easy.
Just yes, small, I got
small
you.
Block right there, you know.
Well, I got you now. So,
I'll tell you what, though, real quick. I live in Southern California now. There's a, you know, beautiful, you know, some restaurants, you know, with high end restaurants and stuff. So, I'll take that Impala there, and there'll be a Lamborghini parked there. There'll be a Ferrari parked there, and I'll pull up with that Impala. I'll drop the back, and oh, everybody freaks out. Everybody's like, "Whoa!"
Yes, that's cool.
And I'm like, "Well, there's a Rolls Royce right there." They said, "We don't care about that. We like this car."
Me too. I'm not into those cars like that either. I like the old cars. They just get me going on. So, all right. So, well, so let's get deep into something.
Yeah. So you're a second generation wrestler, huh?
Yes, I am.
People didn't say, I didn't know that either. When we had some beers over at was OVW, last time I think I saw you. No, the last time I saw you was at Luke Gallows thing. But we last time we had some beers was at OVW. And I didn't even know you were second generation.
Yeah, man, my dad was right. You know how my dad got started in wrestling in San Diego, California. He was,
oh, really?
He was in the Marine Corps there. He was a drill instructor, Marine Corps.
Oh, wow.
And, he hit the ring one night on a match. My dad hit the ring. Yes. And they were shooting an angle, and I guess they thought it was wrong. And my daddy hit the gun, and he didn't hit him, you know, but he missed him. He said he went over the top rope, and he went, holy shit, what have I got into? Bye-bye back and forth. But needless to say, they had to smarten him up.
Right, right.
And put him in the ring, because back then, you know, it's – you know, our business was very sacred, and they took care of it. But he said he got shit beat out of him for about a week, you know, until they smartened him up for that night. I think it was the redheaded guy out there. What was his name, man? He was a shooter.
Red Bastien?
Yes.
Red Bastien,
You know what? I think he's the one that took him to the gym and stretched the shit out of him and stuff. but that's a good thing, though. Yeah, then I broke into his second generation. I have my son, Kerry, that's going to be third generation. But you met Kerry before. You know, sir. You see him at Lou Gallows.
Good yeah, absolutely.
Good yes, kid. And he's here. You know, people, you know, he's out, but out of school right now, which is cool. But my most important thing, and I just tell you that, truth, Chavo, if right. I had an education.
Right.
And everything that had to be in this business is my own fault because I wasn't educated enough to know. Sure. So, and that's it. And I'm not letting let that happen to him. He's got a 4-year free ride to college and take mm-hmm. advantage of it.
It was just a different time back then, man. You know what? We were wrestlers, you know, we wrestled and promoters really. They preyed on the fact that we loved wrestling, or you guys loved wrestling. My dad, you know, that was wrestling. That was your life. That was your business. It wasn't like you had, your restaurant too and your bar. You wrestled. That's what you did. So
yes.
A lot of times I see that they, and nothing, it was just a different time. I get it. You know, they'd give you a contract and, you know, they had their 15 lawyers draw it up, but they expected you to read it. And not have your lawyer look at it, you know. But we didn't have lawyers back then. My dad didn't have a lawyer, you know.
Well, we didn't even have contracts back then. We just went to territory to work.
Handshake, right? And handshake, yep.
Yeah, but you see, Chavo, our business was sacred.
Right.
Listen at me. We were the boys.
I agree.
We depended on each other to make a living. We depended on each other. You know, it's like nowadays, how many times have you worked really, really injured?
Oh, yeah. I was okay. Years.
Yeah, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Back then, when you look at back then, I'm just saying it. The boys took care of you. That many times, you know, I broke my arm, my shoulder would be completely out, and I go to the ring, and nobody would even know it because right. The boys knew how to work to cover it up, to take care of this situation. And if you didn't go to work, you didn't get paid.
Right.
That was whole. Right.
There was no downside. That's what people don't realize. If you did not work, you didn't wrestle, you did not make money that day.
No, you did right. not make no money. And to go back, you know, I tell you the truth, you know, Chavo, I've never had a contract. Really? Never been on a contract.
Really? Wow.
No, I never didn't even have one. And I never forget when WCW took it over, they started signing contracts. Mm-hmm. And I try to get me a little contract, but they told me they ran out of money. And then they signed Bret Hart the next day for $11 million. I went, Jesus Christ, I just want 100 grand. You know what? And not even that. You know, the business is all I know. There wasn't a spot for me. Hell, I put the ring up. I don't care. This right. is what I do. I've been around the wrestling business. At my wrestling school, when I'm around the wrestling business, that's me. It don't matter. Right. And it's hard to give it up. I'm 64 years old. I'll be 65 this year. And I look it, but I keep myself in shape. When I go to somewhere, at least I can give you your money's worth what you're doing. No, I'm not as sharp as I used to be. But I still have to depend on wrestling for a living.
Yeah, you gotta cook, man. I'll tell you what, I said, when I saw you and Robert go last time, you guys were cooking, man. You guys were going.
Well, thank you, my friend. We got that. And that's the reason I got my wrestling school going for. And my most important thing is to get my son started in business. You know, he's really good. And but man, going back, just talking to you, we're talking about wrestling. Like I told you, I was with your Uncle Armando.
Uncle Mono, yep.
Yes, and in my first little territory, and what a territory to go to when you're 20 years old.
Hawaii.
Honolulu. Oh, my God. Yeah, I mean, I'm telling you, you know, and it's just, you wrestled on the, for? About 6 months.
Six months living in Hawaii.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Oh, just laying on the beach every day, and you know how it is. I don't mind saying this, you know, every weekend you crop of people come in right. and you gosh man you just
right.
you really really lived the dream there. Then you know, then I went back to Memphis, and that's where I first met Hector.
Oh yeah.
Hector came in, and he had a great little run in Memphis,
you were
Tennessee.
For,
but
for Jarrett, who's it?
Yes, Jerry Jarrett. Yeah, and then I left again. I went to San Antonio, Texas. That's where I met Chavo, your dad.
Who was that for? Was it for
Joe Blanchard?
Blanchard, okay, Joe Blanchard.
Yes. I lived in San Antonio. We lived in San Antonio.
Anybody listening? So back in the day, the way it was, if, I'm sure a lot of wrestling fans that are listening know this, but if not, they were in territory to territory to territory. There were 6 months in one territory, four months in another territory, 8 months in another territory, and they just traveled the country. They never looked like gypsies almost, you know?
Well, you know what? It is. You know, you ever heard Jimmy Valiant's song? I was raised by a gypsy.
Right? No, right? Yeah.
Boogie. Oh, yes. And
but that's why I think why you guys were so good is because in one territory, you know, you were a babyface. Next territory, you were a heel. Next territory, you were tag team. Next territory, you were managing.
Yes.
You knew every. You did it all.
Yeah, we did it all. But you know what? And it was so. And I tell guys this, in our business, you have to be at the right place at the right time.
Absolutely.
And then when they asked you to do something, instead of saying, huh, you know how to do it. Or instead of saying, oh, I hate for somebody to tell me, I know. Well, if you know, how come you did it that way for? You know, and it cracks my ass, just to tell you the truth.
I know.
Yeah, but then you get in the ring and lock up with the guy, head lock. You go, huh? Jesus, shut up. Get out of the ring.
This is the one I loved when I'd say, like, you know, like I'd be in the ring, call something, the guy in a headlock, I say, hey, just give me a tackle. So as I shoot him off, all of a sudden he's dropping down. And I go, did I say drop down?
I know it. Hey, Bobby Eaton was one of the greatest workers in the business, and absolutely. I love him. But Bobby, he'd be messing with you, and he'd go, all right, Ricky, he'll be Pat Mahalo. Give me a tackle. No, let's do this. And then I'll be hollering. I'll say, damn, Bobby, he'd shoot me off and go, well, you call it. And I'm going to the ropes. but we're so experienced, you know what to do. And you didn't have to do that.
I wrestled Bobby one time in WCW, you know, me green as fuck. I didn't know what was going on. And I just listened. I just sat and listened. And really, we didn't even, if you look back at the match, we really didn't do anything. It was all Bobby, you know. First of all, I couldn't understand a word he was saying until he goes.
Oh, no, I know. But that's what.
Give me one of the uppercuts. I said, what? Give me an uppercut. What? He goes, give me an uppercut. So I gave him an uppercut. And he, oh, my God, he sold it like I shot him with a shotgun. And I was.
Oh, yes.
I froze for a second. And then I fired up. And, oh, my God, it was all Bobby. And then when I got to the back, I had all the, you know, the younger guys like, wow, what a match. That was great. Your fire was great. I said, that was all Bobby. Bobby did it all.
You know what? And that happens to me a lot. People say, man, you did a great Canadian destroyer. Now, let me tell you how this happened. You know the guys, LAX, that...
Yeah. Her dad is in...
Yes. Well, I'm working with them for Joey Janela. This is right before they went to AEW. And the biggest thing we got into it was about, because I knew that they were at TNA at that time. And they wanted to put us over, and I wouldn't let them. I said, no, bro, you're on TV. I'm not. Mm-hmm. You see, and I'm serious. This is just business. This is a business.
You don't
got to do that to me.
Right.
But he goes, I'm selling over the court. He said, my partner's going to do a spot over Robert. I'm off his back at Sunset Flip Me. So, boom, I'm looking here. I come off his back, and I sunset flipping, and all of a sudden, the crowd went, wow, just popped like a son of a bitch. And I stand up and I'm going, what the hell just happened? I don't know what I did, you know? And people were going at the ringside, Canadian destroyer. What the hell is a Canadian destroyer? I don't even know what it is, you know? But you see what I'm saying? Yeah, when you have good workers like that, man, I love them guys too. Gosh, I'm money. But they get it. You understand, they get our business, and it's hard. Somebody asked me the other day, so Ricky Moore, can you still go an hour? If I have somebody that can work,
right?
I can, you know, but you don't find that. And in the 80s was the best time.
Well, it was
in the business I ever had.
This is what I say about my father's era and your era, is that it was the Wild West back then, man. There was no MMA back then. The toughest guys in the world were the pro wrestlers, bar none, period, over and out. That's the way it was. They if you weren't tough as nails, they didn't train you. You didn't make it in this business. They had to, before they let you into the business, they had to make sure you were tough. And if you weren't, you didn't make it. That's just what
no,
it was.
No, you didn't. And I didn't consider myself as a tough guy, but my thing is I never quit.
Well,
you know, I'd come back
tough,
for another.
Tough as nails, man. You got your ass kicked every
come
freaking
back.
Night. And it wasn't like you had to be in a bar punching people out. But at the same time, you're with these guys had to know you were part of that fraternity, and you were you're tough. That's just the way it was.
Well, okay, but let me tell you a great story about that.
Yeah,
Robert and I went down to work. You know, Eddie Graham's one of the first ones to. Because we was just the underneath team, me and Robert were in Memphis. Sure. Okay. And they come up, and this is at the time when Vince was starting to go out. So all the territories got together, and me and Robert was there.
Eddie Graham in Florida, correct?
Yes, and Eddie Graham was there that night.
My dad told me some good stories about Eddie, about how he taught him a lot.
Yes, but see what I'm saying is we had a match, mm-hmm. and he just stood up. I didn't know him from Madeline's ass or nothing. And he goes, guys, I know all y'all brought y'all's top talent in here. And we, you know, we put somebody over tonight. Sure. He said, but I just watched these two boys right here. He said, he sold for 20 minutes and didn't even bury his partner. He goes, that's who you need to push. And I went, wow. But after a while that we went down to Tampa, mm-hmm. and they had a place down there. At my school, I have a dungeon, but it's not the shit. It's just an old building. But they had the dungeon there, and we was having a meeting. So we're not in the territory full time, but we're there. Mm-hmm. So we just went with the boys to the meeting, and it's down in the dungeon back there. And this guy walks in with the manager.
That dungeon was the old Tampa Arena, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Gotcha. And but a guy walks. The office is there too, okay. And they a guy walks in wanting to be a wrestler. I mean, he's talking his stuff. He got a manager with it. And Eddie Graham is looking around. He's looking like, what the fuck? And he goes, well, I'll tell you what I do. And this really, it blew my mind. There's a guy named Spider Galito. Okay. He was sweeping the floors. He's an old man. He's 70 years old then. He's just sweeping the floors. And Eddie Graham told him, says, well, I'll tell you what I do. I put you to read that man back there with that broom sweeping the floor. And then if you do good against him, I let you be with one, try getting rid of one of these guys. And I'm sitting there and I'm thinking to myself, I didn't know Spider went to at the time. I went, oh my God, what's he doing? This guy's going to kill this old man. And listen, I've never seen nothing like this in my life. He gets in the ring. He's barely just walking. And the guy gets in there. He goes, all right, go. And I mean, just a second. Boom, he was on Spider Glinto took him down. But and then Spider jumps up and goes, oh, you must have slipped. Did you slip? Yeah, the guy, yeah, I slipped. They get back up. And the next thing I know, you ever heard of the Russian pretzel hoat?
No.
You know, it's when the guy wonders how he won because – he seen two big balls and he bit them, but he said, it's amazing what you do when you bite your own nuts. You know, Spider Glinto tied the son of a bitch up, and I mean, this is in seconds.
Yep.
And this guy screaming and hollering, and his manager is out there on the floor screaming at him. And that guy hollers back, shut up. You get your ass in here. You think you can do any better? And then Spider let him go. And I never forget this. The guy stood up. He looked around at all us. He looked at Spider Glinto. He goes, thank you, sir. Thank you for letting me know that I'm really not shit in the wrestling business, and walked out the door. Dumbest thing I ever seen in my life. It's all happened in like 45 seconds. You hear me?
Yeah. And there was people around like that. So I mean, when I was in WCW, I mean, we had guys that were, you know, setting up the ring and driving, you know, the ring. And it was Klondike Bill. Remember Klondike Bill?
Yeah, and Gordon.
And then Gordon. And Gordon was the Funk pistol back in the day. I didn't even know.
Oh, yes.
My dad was you know, Gordon. Gordon Nelson. Gordon knows. Like, he goes, that was the Funk's shooter. You know, anybody knows what a pistol is. He's like, he's their guy that anytime somebody got little wise in the ring or a little smart in the ring, they sent him in there and to show him exactly who he was.
You know, every territory had one of those guys. You know that? Every territory had somebody that would, you know, like the Funk's too. They had another one named Dennis Stamps. You ever meet Dennis?
Oh, no, I did not.
Oh, shit. He's a killer. You know, and Cornette even had one when we had Smoky Mountain Wrestling. And a lot of people don't know this. He was the maestro. I don't know if you remember him.
Yeah. No, I do remember the maestro.
His name's Robbie.
I worked with the maestro a couple of times. Really nice guy.
Nice guy.
Yeah.
God, bro. Rip you a new asshole. Really? You understand me? He was Olympic. He went to the Olympics and all that stuff too.
Oh my God.
And I told him, we did a thing, and this one guy, a friend of mine, was in an audience. He goes, how come we called him Robbie Eagle back then because that's what he wrestled, but he was Maestro. But he asked, how come Maestro's up there on the stage with y'all? I said, get about a foot from Jimmy Cornette, and you'll find out. Oh, you hear what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yes, that's just the way it is.
Wow.
Yeah, get about a foot from Jimmy. Get too close. He'll let you know what he's doing up there. And but every territory.
Jimmy had so much heat that he still has so much heat, but he always has somebody next to him, you know.
Yeah, but you know what? I love Jimmy, but holy shit, I don't know what happened to him. I just don't know. I mean, I don't know if it's just because he's got making a lot of money off his podcast or whatever he's doing, but I love the boys. I love Jimmy. Yeah, there's nothing he can say about me to make me not like him because I'm like that. But holy shit, man, you know he needs to chill out.
When I talked to him at a show, I don't know, show in Oklahoma or something a few years back. I think it's a work. I think he basically told me like, hey man, I'm just getting rises out of people. You know, so.
Well, I'm glad for him. I hadn't, usually talk to him, but you know, when I do talk to him, I don't ask him.
Sure.
You know, I don't ask him. If he wants to tell me, he can.
Sure.
But he needs to smarten some people up before somebody hurts him. Cause I knew one guy that said, one of the boys, I said, so I see him, I'm going to slap the shit out of him. I said, yeah, but they get you for child abuse. So this, yes, man, leave that son of a gun alone.
So now you're second generation pro wrestler. You decide you want to get in the business. Who trained you?
Well, travel with my dad.
Okay.
We were, after he got out of the Marine Corps and stuff, back then they didn't have independent wrestling. It was called outlaw wrestling.
Okay.
So he started doing that. Then he got involved with Nick Gulas. We pulled the wrestling ring, and my dad wrestled. And then he started refereeing because he got older. Mm. And we had to go with their dad every day. You know, not every day, but you know, on your
sure.
You know, but in our days we wrestled every day.
Right.
Until he went to Memphis and got a big time job with Jarrett. But for Nick, you know, you wrestle Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, you know, in Nashville and Chattanooga. Nashville was on Wednesday, Chattanooga was on Saturday.
Right. Twice
the other days. Other days my dad had to pull the ring and set it up.
Really?
And we had had four brothers and we had to go with him. And by being on the road with him, getting, you know, because my dad's one of them early birds. That's the reason I am, you know, still today, you know, when the show, I'm there early.
Right. Right.
And it's just because it's habit and going to work. And we're there early. So me and my brothers would get in there and my dad would get in there with us and teach us. But at the time, being for Nick Gulas, you know, the wrestlers aren't what they are today. You know, sure. I mean, today are, are professional wrestlers are, you know, great athletes too. I mean, they're badass, train their ass off for their, and they do. But then they didn't. And you didn't draw many people. And at that time, I thought about doing it, but I didn't want to do it. I thought about doing it, and I didn't want to do it. But then I started wrestling for it. But this time, my dad had went to, because Jerry Jarrett and Nick Gulas, they went opposition. And I'm telling you, buddy, and Jerry Jarrett had the Memphis territory in the early, in the late 70s and the early 80s. Holy, you couldn't believe. If Memphis didn't sell out every Monday night, they would change stuff. Right. You understand me?
Yeah.
And, you know, just like I do in territories, this is what really got me to. You're never going to get over the owners, you know, and you're never going to get out, you know, and don't get me, Jerry Lawler's one that gave me my, the Rock and Roll Express, Ben Robert, but you know, Jerry was the king of Memphis. He's never going to get over it, but it was all right though. What
he was protecting his spot for sure.
Oh, but what I learned, but don't get me wrong. I will say this to you too. Jerry Lawler's one of the best workers I ever been in the ring with.
Really?
Have you had the honor to wrestle him?
Never been in the ring with him.
And see, this is what, and I learned this right here. You see, great workers to me are not somebody that does this and does that. A great worker can work with anybody.
Correct.
You see what I'm saying? And I watched Jerry Lawler. I seen him do a thing one time with them, with one of the midgets in Memphis. Holy sh! What a match they had. Really? I couldn't believe it, how good it was. And you didn't go over, but what I'm saying is, at that time when I was working for Nick and my dad, he told me, he said, I was off one day. He said, why don't you go to Evansville, Indiana with me tonight? And I was looking, so I said, all right. And, you know, you always bring your wrestling bag, always, right. Never always. Forget it. It's in the car.
Yeah, you always,
and I get to Evansville.
Always brought your gear.
Yeah, in Evansville. And Memphis was hot, you know. That was part of the territory, but every town was like it. It was in Evansville, Indiana. Yep. The old saying I have all the time, they was hanging from the rafters, people everywhere. And I get there, and somebody's car broke down, and two of the baby faces couldn't make it. They called in, they couldn't get there. And my dad asked Jerry Jarrett, he says, won't you let my boy wrestle? And Jerry was kind of, you know, our business is right there. He's kayfabe. And he goes, I don't know, Paul. And then he come here and he asked me, says, do you want to work my show? I said, God, I'd love to. And I don't know if you knew Kenny Wayne Peel, one of the Nightmares, Kenny Wayne. Great worker.
I know. I remember the Nightmares, but not Kenny Wayne.
Yeah, he was one of them. So I remember Jerry telling me, he said, okay, y'all go out there. If it's a good match, go 15 minutes through. But I remember Jerry Jarrett turned around, looked at my dad and goes, if the match sucks, take it home.
Sure.
Right. What leads to say, me and Kitty clicked. We had a hell of a match. And I was coming back from the dressing room and Jerry Jarrett came out behind the door and grabbed me. He says, if you like, you can start Memphis TV Saturday morning. And that's and it did. That's when I,
he was smart.
Going,
he saw a young, good looking kid. He's like, oh, I can make some money off this kid.
Yeah, but see, Memphis. I mean, but that time though, man, you go into these older trums that were sold out. I'm coming from 30 people in a building.
Right.
To Memphis did 10,000 people every week. This is in the early 80s, man. But what a learning experience, Chavo, I had there. Another thing, Jerry Jarrett, I was wrestling in Memphis. I don't know if you remember a guy by the name of Killer Carl Krupp.
Killer Carl Krupp, yeah, not Cox. Krupp.
Yes.
Yeah, I do.
Yes. You know, and I'm working with him in Memphis, and I guess he didn't want to put me over. So I went to the ring. And God, it was like pulling teeth. So finally, I just told him, I said, all right, man, I went through every finish you could ever imagine because I'm selling for him and I'm kicking out of every one of them. Right. And then finally he gives me a turnbuckle. I move and I scoop on him. I get out and I walk to the back, and Jerry Jarrett used to spit at Copenhagen in a cup. And I come walking back, and he reached out and grabbed me again. He goes, Krupp didn't want to sell for you, did he? I says, I don't know, because I didn't knock nobody. I didn't. I says, I don't know. He said, oh, I know. He says, you're the underneath guy. You're wrestling a killer called Krupp. He hits you with every finish in the world. You kicked out on one, and you small packaged him. Jerry Jarrett looked at me and went, you're the toughest son of a bitch I ever seen in my life. He goes, I might have to put the world title on you. Then he started laughing, and I walked off. But you see, I was, our business was so, I loved Memphis at that time. God, you know, it's like Woodstock, but you know, you go into the shows to do TV at Memphis on Saturday morning, and the motels would be 1,000 girls out there.
Yeah, you guys were rock stars. Oh my God, you guys were freaking rock stars.
Wow. It, you know what?
Yeah.
Literally looking back, we were, but see, it took everybody to do that.
Sure.
You know, me and Robert drew a lot of money with your dad and Hector.
Right.
Especially in Texas. You know, we worked for Bill, you know, we went to work for Bill Watts. We did the thing with the Midnight Express, and the Midnight Express left. Then we went into an angle with Chavo and Hector.
Right.
Holy shit. And you know, they used to wear those, what do you call the things with the bullets?
The bandoleros.
Okay. Yeah. The bandoleros. Chavo was swinging them one night, and they hit perfect.
And they popped.
And they went off.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, bow, bow. But, you know, they were blanks, but we didn't know that.
Yeah.
Man, I was jumping down off the ring. I'm what the boy? He's looking around. He's going, that never happened before. Damn.
That's funny. You know, I tell you what, that I remember my dad telling me about Memphis, back to Memphis, that Elvis was a big wrestling fan, that he used to go to the matches, and he would just sit up top in the balcony and look over and watch the matches. And then we went to the Cauliflower Alley Club one time back in the day before it was, you know, all the fans were there when it was just the boys. And we met this, and I forget her name, but it was an older lady wrestler, still very pretty, very good-looking lady.
Was her name Cora Combs?
I think that was it. And then my dad goes, that girl right there, she slept with Elvis.
You know what? You know what? And I'm going to tell you, my dad knew Elvis from there. Yeah, he come to the wrestling.
Right.
He incognito, you know, he
of course
have a wig and all kinds of stuff on. He loved wrestling.
Right.
And he did this. But matter of fact, I just seen you know, Alice Cooper is a friend of mine. Okay. And I was asking, he was telling me about first time he met Elvis.
Uh-huh.
You know, this is in the early 70s. And
sure.
They sent for him. Elvis sent for him to come over there. See, hell, I'm gonna meet Elvis. So he walks in a room with Elvis, and he says, the first person I seen is Linda Lovelace. She's in the room with it.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And then Elvis walks up to him, and you know, Elvis, he says, hey, boy, you the one that wears that makeup? He goes, yeah, I do. He goes, oh, that's cool. Real cool. And he said, that's all he said to him. You know, but he said that, he said it was wild as hell, but. Could you imagine that, meeting Elvis? Holy shit.
Well, back in the day, there's people that's hung out with the wrestling fans. I mean, I remember some of the guys like at Madison Square Garden, they were telling me, you know, Andy Warhol would be there, and all these just people that you would not expect were these huge wrestling fans back in the day.
Yes, and that happened a lot. You know, I was in the era in Memphis with Andy Kaufman.
That's right.
When he come there, you know, and when Andy Kaufman, the camera wasn't known.
Right.
He's the most quiet guy you ever seen in your life. He was didn't do nothing. But boy, as soon as that camera come on, he went into a character. Holy crap. I met a lot of people in this business. You have to. You know, WWE, you know.
Right.
They, you know, it's a movie star. You're a movie star when you wrestle that role.
Yes,
so you have that movie star status.
I went to the SAG Awards not too long ago, the Screen Actor Guild Awards. And when we were there, you know, I think this was the Netflix party, you know, because I'm you know that I'm doing some stuff in Hollywood and that kind of stuff now. So I went to one of those parties. You know, everybody was there. I mean, all these A-listers and stuff. people were coming up to me, Chavo, hey, man. Oh, good to see you. They're wrestling fans. I couldn't believe it.
Oh, yes. All of them are, buddy. You know? They all are. And yeah, it's really cool. And it's happened a lot of times, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I was in Nashville one time doing something, and a guy come up and was talking to me. And I'm, man, how you doing? And he walked off. The guy goes, man, that was Garth Brooks you was just talking to.
Oh, really?
And yeah, I went, holy shit. I went and grabbed him. I said, man, I said, I'm sorry. I didn't. I said, hell, I'm a Garth Brooks is, you know, a big deal in Nashville, fella. But I'm saying, we went into this angle with your dad.
Yeah.
Hector. And Hector. And boy, they would call some, you know, because you didn't go over matches then.
Yeah, you just called the ring. And especially if you guys knew each other like that, like you guys had been working together, you just get in the ring and just go.
Yeah, but they'd do stuff, man. Look here, man. I mean, Hector would do something to me, and next thing, here come Chavo doing a spinning dive, you know, like a bullet. Yeah. Wow, wow, wow. Man, hit me. Yeah. But never hurt me one time.
Sure, sure.
And I trusted him. I seen the other day, and I forgot about stuff like this is where I hit. Your dad come running. I did something. I hit Hector with the crossbody off the top of the cage. And the people went nuts. And boy, in those cage matches, man, he'd climb over the cage.
Uh-huh.
And I have his hair with my hands, but he'd hold on to my wrist and swing from the top of the cage. But, you know, it's.
Yeah.
God, that's strong. That's strong shit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Man,
yeah.
You're dead. I'm going, holy shit. You fall, it's going to break your leg. But man, but you what he was doing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You guys would cook, man. Some of the videos I'd see, you know, VHS tapes of you guys going, gosh, dang, you guys just went. You know, I remember one.
Oh, yeah.
It was a four-way tag team match. It was you guys. It was Rock and Roll. It was the Midnight Express. It was my dad and Hector. And then it was, I think, the Fantastics maybe. Oh my God.
Yes, it was. I remember that.
You did more stuff than you just did everything. It was.
Yeah, but it was cool though, man. Like I told you earlier, I'm not just because he's your dad, but
sure.
But Chavo was my friend.
I know.
Him did a lot of stuff together and stayed up a lot of nights together watching TV. And
Oh yeah. Like I said, it was the Wild West back then. That's for sure.
Yes, it was. And had some good times. Our business is, you know, it like you said, it was a sacred business then.
Yeah.
Well, you know, everybody that come up to you wasn't a wrestler. Right. Everybody you talk to now, they try to give you the wrestling handshake. What the hell are you doing? You don't even know what, you know, the guys don't even know what that means, you know? Flips me out sometimes. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. I was gonna say something. You got my train of thought got lost, but you guys were on the road so much together, and that's what people don't realize is like there's times that I didn't see my dad for 6 months out of the year, you know, straight. I wouldn't see him because he'd be in a certain territory, but he'd be with you guys. So you were their family more than our family because of the fact that you guys were with each other 24/7. The only time you'd leave is when you'd go to each other's rooms, you know, and hotel rooms. We're gonna go train. We're going to go to drive, you know, 300 miles. We're going to wrestle. We're going to drive back. We're going to hit the bar. And there we go, you know.
That's what I was kind of getting to earlier, Chavo. Yeah. See, we all depended on each other. Mm-hmm. And when an angle works. And I'm going to give you a couple of things to remind. You know, when after getting over and going to the Crockett's, you know, I had opportunity. It's where Magnum T.A. got hurt.
Magnum, yeah.
And
was it a car accident?
Yes. See, they were grooming him for the world title. Now, Rick didn't cut. They don't have nobody to work Rick. Okay. And, we've been doing but I was at the right place at the right time. Mm-hmm. So I got to do an angle with him. But see, we did the angle, but before you had bicycle tapes then. Mm-hmm. And it's like I'm working Dick Murdoch. And, you know, and he knows I'm getting ready. I just shot this angle with Flair and it's going around, you know, so Dusty's got me in a single matches, getting me ready for Flair. And this is how the boys worked. And I'm having a hell of a match with Dickie and he's getting the heat on me. He goes, oh man. He said, you just did that angle with Flair. He said, you're going to make us all a lot of money. He said, I'm going to hit you with the brain buster. That's his finish.
Yeah, that's right.
Kick out on one. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay. That's how our business worked and everybody knew. Same thing with the Midnight Express. You know, their finish was that rocket launcher. And Dennis is telling me the same thing in the ring. He says, God, I'm going to miss not working with you. He says, but boy, you got to make us a lot of money.
Right.
Bobby's going to hit you with the brain buster, kick out on one. Right. But you see, that's what got me ready. And boy, and we did. I mean, Rick had a hell of a run for a while. It did good. You know, it's like George South. You know, I everybody, Chavo, that thing could work, even your underneath guys.
Right.
Because, you know, like you said earlier, they got the shit beat out of them. They learn how to work because our business, they wouldn't let you in the business if you couldn't. And it's like George told me, he said, hell, you bought my first house. And that's cool. But it's serious. That's the way the things were back then. Good. And what I'm getting back to is we depended on each other.
Yeah.
I don't know now because I don't work with the big organizations. I go do some stuff every now and then, but I'm saving for the right time, fella.
Sure.
Because it's going to have to do something.
Absolutely.
And Ricky Morton's going to be there to give his advice then. But the boys are not the boys. I mean, they just don't take care of each other. They don't have a.
I don't know for sure because I'm not there either, but I just feel like that they're, you know, in their, we did, like you said, we depended on each other so much that I would go to my room, shower, go down to the bar, go hang out with, because if not, I went crazy. I'd go stir crazy. We're on the road.
Yes, I got you, bud.
And then, you know, there was no real, like social media wasn't like that, you know, and, you know, streaming Netflix and stuff. That wasn't there. Video games. We didn't play that stuff. We
got didn't have time.
No, we drank, we wrestled, then we drank till, you know, with all the, you know, Ric Flair, everybody down in the bar. And then we got about 4 hours sleep and we got up and then we trained and then we ate and then we trained.
Yes. And hit the road.
Yeah.
So and that's just the way it was at that time. And it was, but it was good though, man. I have some of my greatest memories. You know, it's like I was telling somebody, I've been with Robert longer. Right. I've been with my wife.
Right. You hear me?
Yeah, man. Right, we've been, and it's hard. You know, I just seen a lot of guys at tag team wrestling, man. They're together about 6 months. And next thing you know, they're fist fighting. They're fighting. They don't have. But Robert and I depended on each other too. You know, my deal was to sell, give him a hot tag.
Right.
And then if things got a little, you know how it is when you're around somebody a long time, we just ride with somebody else.
Yeah.
And then this season, 2 weeks, we start riding again. We got new stories to tell.
Yeah.
New things to talk about. And see, that's the secret. It's like that. You know, it's
me and Eddie were like that, man. When we were together, because we're basically brothers, you know. He was my dad's youngest brother by 18 years, so he was only 3 years older than me. So, you know, there was times that we were at each other's throats, but we both.
Oh, I know.
Once it was time, we got in that ring and we cooked. We went.
Oh, yes.
Boom, and he was gonna die for me, and vice versa. I was gonna get in the ring, die for him. Like that's what it was. Like I felt like at that time that there was nobody better. At that time, just because we just clicked so much, like you're gonna kill him, you gotta kill me too. You know, that's way it was.
Oh, I got you, dude. That's the way me and Robert were too.
You know, there was times we split up that we didn't ride together, and then we'd ride just because it is what it is. Sometimes you get in each other's nerves. We're a bunch of assholes that are always, you know, balls to the wall at all times. You know.
Yeah, but you got to learn how to do that.
Yeah.
And that's what keeps it together. Because me and Robert, we wasn't only, you know, it's like I was married to him, really. Oh, yeah, I'm serious.
I know.
I'm bickering and fighting all the time.
Yeah.
And a lot of the boys back in, they'd poke that fire. You know what I'm saying? They get me and Robert hard in the dressing room, and they'd sit back and just laugh their ass off.
Well, we used to
but
do
I wouldn't
too.
Change
as,
nothing.
As soon as we saw somebody, you know, like sell something, there'd be like sharks in the water. Oh, my God. Oh, Oh, he sells this. Oh man, this bothers him. Oh, we would just be on top.
Oh yeah.
That was our entertainment, man. That was our entertainment, you know.
It sure was. I mean, but I wouldn't change nothing, you know.
Right. Sure.
You stop to think about it. Somebody asked me if you had to go back, what would you change? I said, I wouldn't change nothing, because one thing, because I'm a firm believer in Jesus Christ. I don't care what. Sure. If you change one second in your life, I wouldn't have my wife, my kids.
Sure.
You know that? You
no,
wouldn't.
No, I agree with you.
If you just changed one second in your life. But Robert and I had a hell of a run together, and we still do. We still depend on each other.
Yeah.
You know, it's like when we go matches, and I do. I I'm not a bodybuilder, but I still go to the gym every day. I work out every morning. I do a lot of cardio.
Yeah.
And sometimes, and don't think that I'm knocking Robert, because I'm not.
Right.
But if he's not up to par, right, I am. I take care of him. Nobody knows.
Right.
You know what I'm talking about.
I know
there.
Exactly what it is.
No one
knows, because you take the load. If you're hurt, no one knows, he takes over the load. Yeah.
Yes. But, you know, right. I do that. You know, Robert's hips bother him and his knees, but that's all right. Nobody knows.
Absolutely.
But I depend on him. He depends on me. And honestly, Chavo, to tell you the truth, I make more money now than I ever made in my life.
That's awesome. That's great.
I sure do.
You deserve it. You guys have been everywhere you've gone, you know, and it's.
Yes, I did.
You've paid those dues.
I'm 64 years old. I make more money now than I ever made in my life.
That's great.
Yes, it is. And I'm glad for you too, son. I watched, and don't get me wrong, I think Chavo didn't talk about you all the time. You did.
Right.
You know, your son. And you know, we catch a peek. Same way with me and my boy.
Right.
You know, he's really good looking kid and big boy, and he's really good, but it's not his time yet.
Sure.
And it's not your time yet. Your time will come. Huh?
He'll get there. He'll get there.
No, that's too much going on in life right now. Like I told you earlier, our business, you got to be at the right place at the right time.
That's right.
And I told him, I says, and you'll be there one day. They're going to ask you to do something. That's what we got into earlier, huh?
Yeah.
You never say, huh?
Right.
If they ask you to wear a T-bar to the ring, ask them what color.
That's right. That's right.
Right? Yeah, what color? That's the way it is.
How did you guys get you're saying that Jerry gave you that Rock and Roll Express gimmick, but how did they put you guys together?
Well, you know what? My dad was smart in this business. My dad always told me, he said, Ricky, most territories are owned by single wrestlers, and as being a tag team.
Yeah.
Baby faces or heels, mm-hmm. You always have a place to go to, because they'll bring you in because you're not a threat to the top.
Right.
Baby face or top heel. I'm really serious.
No, yeah, I hear you.
And I get into that here just in a second. I'll tell you something. But I had some great partners, a guy named Sonny King, me and Eddie Gilbert Sonny were King. Tag team partners.
Okay.
And to me, and I say this all the time, people say, God, Ricky Morton, you're one of the best baby faces. But I said, no, Ken Lucas was the best baby face. Hey, look here. Now I'm jumping from another limb, because it reminds me, Ken Lucas had some Azora Jr. and he put some TMSO in it one time because he rubs it on. And your dad saying
TMSO, if anybody knows, TMSO was something that they'd give the horses that
yes.
is legal for
yes.
us. But they'd put it was like a pain, reliever type thing.
And yes.
they'd give it to horses, but you know, the boys would get hold of it and we would use it.
Yeah. But listen though, yeah, it's over Junior and it goes right into your bloodstream. Yeah.
Sure. So yes. You could taste
Chavo
it. As soon as you put it on, you can taste it. Yeah.
Yeah, Chavo go, my neck was hurting it.
Yeah.
So he asked Kenny DeBart, he rubbed it on his neck, and the next thing you read, it was going, ah! It burning him up, and he ran and jumped in the shower, and it made it hotter.
Hotter.
God. Laughing. I was on the floor crying. But being with Kenny, he taught me that everyone I learned from. But Kenny, he was a hell of a baby. He drew a lot of money in his days. And he taught me the importance of selling in a match and how to do that. So, and like I was saying, Jerry Jarrett and Jerry Lawler, they got mad at each other. So Lawler's going to go opposition from him. So he come to San Antonio and He said, I want to put, because they had the Fabulous Ones in Memphis at the time, Stan Lane and Steve Kern.
Okay.
They were over.
Right.
So he wanted a tag team for his part. So, but needless to say, I left San Antonio, went back to Memphis. I'm going home. They teamed me up with Robert, but Jerry Jarrett and Jerry Lawler made up. Now we're second fiddle. Okay.
Sure.
So, but at this time, be at the right place at the right time now. Right. Jimmy Hart gave us our name.
Oh, really?
But Jerry Lawler put us together because, you know, Jimmy Hart and the music, he's going R&R, Rolls Royce, Cinema. And I'll never forget, he told Jerry Lawler, he goes, why don't we call him the Rock and Roll Express? And Jerry Lawler goes, that's the worst name I ever heard, but we need one. We'll go with it, right? So that's, but at that night, Bill Watts was getting ready to retire. And I'm going to see everything we talked about is going to go in sync here in a second. As I've been talking along, right place, right time, right to do this,
right.
Territories. Bill Watts is going to retire, and he wanted a booker that didn't work for you, couldn't push yourself. Okay. He was there in Memphis that night when they were all together, and Eddie Graham stood up and said that. Needless to say, about a week later, he asked us, would we be interested in coming to Louisiana? And then Bill Dundee come to me and told me he was taking the book over. I said, well, hell yeah, because I love Bill Dundee. You know, he's a little guy. He
sure.
He knew how to do some things, and he brought that Memphis work with him. But see, now we get to Louisiana. You know who the top baby face was?
Who?
Abdullah the Butcher.
In Louisiana?
Really? Yes. Now, but see, now you got to understand what I'm saying earlier. See, he was a top heel.
Uh-huh.
Him and Bill Watts just finished their angle. See, now, when you know how this shit works.
Right.
That heel, you got to turn him babyface.
Right.
For the next heel come in, for he can beat Abdullah for Bill Watts to wrestle him. Right. You see, that's how
that stuff worked. Right.
Okay, but now all that didn't happen. It's all big guys. Hacksaw Jim Duggan and Dr. Death Steve West, when Dr. Death was real big.
Yeah.
His
head was about this big. I remember that head.
God, he is a monster. And then here come Bill Dundee. And Bill Dundee was the first one. Yo, this is the time when the Russians and us fighting. Here we are, two young baby faces, rocks, you know, playing rock and mo, rock, you know, the Rock and Roll Express, the bandanas. Right. Holy shit, we shot an angle with Nikolai Volkoff and Barry Dorso, the Russians, and holy shit, it just instantly over. And the whole time that we were fighting the Russians, they're building the Midnight Express, and Jimmy Cornette is running that mouth. Everybody's hating him. And for the territory come up with us, and then when Cornette hit the ring, him and Bobby Eaton on being Dennis Condrey, holy shit, the territory.
Yeah.
Right place, right time.
Right time, right place, right
time. Right things doing. And listen, we was young. Me and Robert were still young.
Right.
Bobby Eaton was young, too. We all grew up together. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. In the business. But Dennis Condrey, he was the master.
Mm.
God, he was so good. God, he could weave and sew that match and paint them pictures by numbers. Greatest thing in the world to watch him in his younger days like that. And it just happened. You see what I'm saying? It just happened. That's a big deal, boo, when you pop a territory.
Yeah.
And then we go to, well, we're in, hell, I'll tell you what, we wrestled the Road Warriors in the Superdome. For Bill Watts. You know, they brought the Road Warriors in. Dude, that's 40,000 people.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, the first time I saw the Road Warriors was a tape of my dad. When he'd go to Japan all the time, the referee would, you know, give a VHS tape of the show. You know, I'd come home and see my dad's matches, but then I'd see, you know, Road Warriors. And I'm like, who are these guys? Oh, my God. They come out and they're hitting.
Yes.
And stuff. Gosh, I was like, wow. I've never seen this before.
Yeah, well, see, and they're in our territory. And Joe and Animal, you know, they had the reputation of hurting people, but every time I work with them, hell, they put us over in the Superdome.
Yeah.
Double drop kick, but it was great and blew it off. But then that's when, you know, Flair went back and told Crockett about us, and Dusty was fixing to take the book over for Jimmy Crockett.
Yeah.
And that, and the same thing, it just, we come in, Dust, and I got to say this now, I love Dusty Rhodes. Well, no, we didn't always get along. We had a lot of FU fights.
Sure.
Well, we did, but it's just the boys in the dressing room and back and forth. But he was smart as hell, man. We did the same thing. We went in. This time it was Ivan Koloff and Barry Dorso. And listen to me. They were the world champions, and they beat everybody in the territory. I'm talking Magnum TA, Dusty, beat them. Bubba. And then they brought us in on TV, showed them videos of us that we made. Our first night in was in Shelby, North Carolina. This place was, they hadn't never seen us before. And I tell you how secret our business was and how kayfabe we did. They had the matches for the TV, but the second TV, they had all the matches and me and Roberts on last, right? Last match on TV with Ivan and Barry Dorso. And Dusty goes, hey, I'm going to change this match right quick. Rock and roll, y'all against the Russians on the first match. But we go an hour. We do the whole time. See, none of the boys do. You understand?
Really. Yeah, you worked everybody.
We did. I did. Dusty said, y'all going to win the titles, but it's right 5 minutes before we did it. Didn't talk over nothing. And y'all won the hole. Y'all go 58 minutes. We give you the cue to go home. Ricky Morton, I need you to do something spectacular to be the finish. You know, and I did I called it the horse, jump on the back, to the flip over. And the victory row.
Yeah, victory roll.
I call it the victory roll that was heard around the world because it did. We won the world titles. The territory just.
Oh, I saw that. I know. And that's one thing. I think that was when you guys tripped, was it Ivan down? And then you did the
victory roll. No, they had. Barry was holding Robert.
That's what it was.
Ivan had the chain fixed to hit him with it, and I come up behind him.
That's what it was. Yeah.
Yes.
That was beautiful.
But you know what? And lucky too, because I never done it.
Really?
No, I never done it before. Ivan, we were in the match working. He says, what's that finish again? Yeah. I'm going, I never met Ivan.
Yeah, really?
Never met him. No. And I think if that finish didn't go over as good as it did, we wouldn't have did the business that we done. Sure. It was just perfect. It blew everybody's mind.
Sure. What people don't realize too is that people ask, when did you rehearse or when did you practice? It hurts too much to sit and practice these moves.
Damn right it does.
Some of these moves, I'm like, oh my God, like I just thought I could do this one move. I'm going to try it. That's how it worked.
Yes. You know, I was at my school last night and, I was in the ring with the guys. And I just told them, I says, don't touch me. Y'all lock up and we go through this stuff. I says, my ass is too old. It's hard to take, and that's why my hat's off to all the boys that wrestled with no crowds.
Yeah. Oh my God. So hard. I don't know how they do that.
You know what though, man, my hats are off to them because I know when you feed off the crowd and all of a sudden it's like me, I worked on a couple of them. I got slammed with nobody in that building. And I felt like one of those cartoons just fell into a million pieces, and look here.
No joke.
Come out, sweep you out of the ring.
You're dust. You turn into dust.
Yeah.
Right? Well, that's the thing. Is like people don't realize how much energy we get from the crowd. We get that, like when you're in the crowd and you're in a big arena, and you got 10,000 people there or more, and they're yelling, and I don't feel anything. You could punch me in the face.
No, I don't feel nothing.
I don't feel anything. But you do it, and when there's nobody there, I feel everything.
Yes, right? That's true, Chavo. I was just sitting here thinking, man, gosh, the matches and the things that we've done, that hurt because that adrenaline was going. Yeah. If you did, next day, you're back to work. You got to go.
The next morning, that hurt. But in the ring, I'd be like, chop me harder.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Well, you know what? And I'm glad because, you know, me being a baby, I worked with a lot of guys a long time, you know, right. Chop me. I said, dude, I don't chop. It's not my gimmick.
Me either.
I don't chop.
Right.
You know, that's, and I let you, and like Brian Pillman, mm-hmm. I worked Brian Pillman a whole bunch, and God, he'd hit me so hard with a chop.
Yeah.
And then finally I just got where he'd chop me and I'd slap it right beside the face and he'd go, I mean, I'm hard. Bam. He'd go, yeah. God, I said, yeah, shit hurts. Don't it
hurts. It
and,
hurts.
Yeah. and then he had to work, you know, he just the way it was. I'm sorry. I'm not a tough guy, but Brian, he didn't know. I said, dude, this is a work, man. You light a cigarette off my damn chest.
Yeah, I used to. I used to do stuff with Benoit, and I'd fall out of the ring, and I'd have him. We just knew each other so well in that ring. I'd fall out of the ring, and I'd just have him chop me, and I'd go to the other side of the ring. I'd be on the floor, right next to the rail, right next to the people. He'd chop the shit out of me. Then I'd go to the next side. He'd chop the shit out of me. Chop all four corners. I'd go back in the ring, and then we had him because everybody's like, oh my god, like. This is real. These guys are really. Oh my god! And we had it right there. And we go. Then anything we did, it was fine. But once I got next to those people, and he chopped the crap right there, they were in awe.
And I like that because when I sewed, if I can make that person on the front row, I would sell it like it really happened to me. And I just to study stuff like that.
Yeah, you believed it.
You know now. You know you don't. Punch a guy in the gut and he does a forward row. How many times you seen that? You sell it like you really did. Now, when I get to doing that, then many times working with the boys, you know, my nickname Punky is Punky. You all right? You know, and I used to love it. Yes. Now the guy I'm working with, they some hurt. This guy here on the front row. What do you think those guys up in that balcony or the people at home on TV? They really believe in what I'm doing.
Absolutely.
You know, you can't, you know, I said, guys, listen, when you get the heat, I could sell one punch better than I can 37.
Absolutely.
Because if you give me 37 punches, I need to be dead.
Yep.
You kick me 35 times in my head, I can never get up. And that's why I got one of my first breaks in the business. I don't know if you know this or not. Man, Robert was, you know, playing second fiddle to the Fabulous Ones in Memphis, and we were wrestling Randy Savage and Lanny Poffo.
Brothers.
We working. Me and Randy were the first ones, I promise you, to ever break a table.
Really?
Randy power dropped me through the table. It was one of them big, thick tables, too. I don't know how it broke, but it broke. And Randy's trying to get me up.
Get
me back in the race. Maybe we got to go into the finish. I wouldn't get up. I sewed it.
Yeah.
Look here. I sewed it. And it made our own angle. And it got over like a son of a bitch. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Instead of, you know, boom, I laid on the floor. And I think they did a finish where they screwed Robert. And I was on the floor. And they brought the gimmick out to bring me back.
Right.
And I get in the back. And Randy's going, God, man. I said, no, dude. I just sewed it. And boom, that TV Saturday, man, here I come out with that neck brace on and trying to talk, and they jump on me, and here comes Lawler and Dundee getting Randy, and everything meant something.
I agree.
And that's how really, that's when I really, really realized how important selling is in the business. And if you do it right, you know, I've been watching little stuff on the A&E, WWE's having on there. And notice Terry, Hulk Hogan. You know, I know Terry. He started in Memphis, too. He wasn't the best worker in the world. I mean, he's over. Don't give me a shot, but he's over. But what did he do? He sewed. He sewed. And he got over. Man, that made that comeback, jerk that damn shirt off. He was all over, but the flying and dying and the crying and the head scissors.
I noticed that too. When I'm watching TV now, I'm watching any matches. It's that they're working too hard. They're not selling. Like, you know, you got to shoot somebody with a bazooka for it to mean anything. Now it's like, guys, have you ever got punched in the face in a bar? I mean, there's times that you get, sometimes you get punched in the face and you're, hey, you know, you'll keep going. Doesn't hurt at all. And there's sometimes you get punched and you can't see, you're falling. You can't, you're groggy. Like it's not realistic anymore. What I see is these people are going these power bombs and they, you know, they're nipping up and I'm like, what are you doing?
That's what I'm, you know,
hard.
You try, yeah. And that was what I was trying to make.
Yeah.
What I was saying earlier, you know, I could sell one better than I can a million because it's not realistic. That's right. And that's the reason why. And is it because the boys are scared? They look weak.
Yeah.
Or is that, or they think being weak, they're not going to work on top or something. I don't know.
Hey, you take one body punch. You watch, you know, UFC. You watch pro boxing. You take one body punch, and these guys, like, you know, like a kidney punch. Oh, you drop. You drop to the floor because your whole body, your whole organ seize up.
Oh yeah, but
that's real.
Yeah, but now they run over you in a car and you kick out on one.
That's true. I know. And then everything's
serious.
Everything's two. I agree. I do. But you know what, man? Hey, it's a different time, and it's one of those. You know, whatever, what? Man. It's one of those that I
can't. No way. No way situation.
We can pick it apart, but at the same time, hey, you know, I think that's maybe why careers are a lot, they're not lasting like they used to last. Now, these guys are wrestling for like 4 years or 5 years and they're done because of the fact that, man, just the punishment these guys are going through, that they're putting their bodies through, you can't do that. You can't.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you something, Chavo, sure. Because I never wrestled. With they WWE put us in the Hall of Fame. We never even wrestled for them.
Right.
But that's cool though. That's, I mean, that's a great compliment. Mm-hmm. But I'm trying to say is, as I've been reading a lot and they've been letting a lot of people go.
Mm-hmm.
What's up? I don't understand. Before, is it?
Well, you know,
the office, or they don't know where they're headed.
Yeah. So what happens a lot of times in WWE is that once it comes to a certain time, like after WrestleMania and that kind of stuff, you know, you got budget cuts. You got, you know, now when you have stockholders, it's all mm-hmm. a shuffle of numbers is what they're trying to do to make their numbers look better.
Mm-hmm.
So you let people go, which you cutting part of the budget out, and you just made this money from WrestleMania, but now your budget got less, so your profit margins are a little higher. That's sometimes when it happens, but another times too is that, you know, sometimes they think there's no real rhyme or reason to it. Even when I was there, I'd be like, okay, why did they let go of this guy, but they kept this guy? You know, this guy. You know, he's okay, you know, no big deal. But this other guy's money, and he wasn't breaking the bank. He could make so much money. That's when I was saying, like, Luke Gallows, mm-hmm. when they let him go from WWE, then he went to TNA, and he was there for a while, and then they let him go. I go, wait a minute. This guy's a 6'7", 300-pounder who does business, who sells his ass off, who can work, who's not breaking the bank. Why would you let this guy go? I don't understand. Then he went to Japan and killed it, and now the guy's working for five different companies and doing well and hustling his ass off. So I don't know, man. Sometimes there's no rhyme or reason. I don't know why they let some people go and keep some people. It's weird.
Me either. I mean, I sit and think. I mean, I see a lot of good talent.
Oh, great
there.
Talent.
You know, and then I see a lot of talent that stays there. Yeah. They never get rid of. You know, they're having trouble getting out of their contracts. You know, they ask me out of their contract. No. Okay.
Yeah, right.
And they're not even at the same level as the person they let go. To me, that's the way out.
Right.
I'm
kind of the same thing with you. I believe the
same thing.
And I don't know if there's who's in charge. I'm not sure. You know, I'll put it this way. When we started doing Lucha Underground and I was involved in that, and some of the wrestlers that we got that were let go from WWE, I was like,
mm-hmm.
why did they let this guy? This guy's an amazing talent. They just didn't know what to do with him. You know, guys like Willie Mack and Brian Cage, and then like
mm-hmm. just
some other guys that like Ricochet. You know, he wrestled for as Prince Puma for us. He tried out for WWE and didn't make it. I'm like, how did this guy not make it? This guy's incredible. He sells his ass off. He can do it. He's like an action hero. He can do anything. And then he's there, you know, kicking butt. So I was literally like. Whoever was in charge back then should have been fired because some of the guys they let go were these amazing wrestlers.
Yes, I mean, great talents. You know, and I love all the boys.
Absolutely.
You know,
I'm saying
I can't, you know, I guess working in the office there wouldn't be a job for me because I couldn't,
well,
you know,
you're not a dick.
Well, I couldn't do that. You know, I couldn't, because the way I look at it is this guy's, this is his job, how he feeds his family. This is his job that gives him the advantage over the regular 8-9 to 5 job that he has a little bit more doing this. And all of a sudden you're cut off. I don't like that.
Yeah. It's and I'm getting an
argument with a lot of the boys back there, you know, and sometimes they're not, you'd be sitting there and somebody, Dusty asked somebody, how was that match? I say, oh, this is shit.
Right.
I'd go grab that guy. I said, come here, man. I said, don't say that about them people. The match was a shit.
Right.
I said, hell, he feeds his family. Dusty Lobb will let him go, give his notice, and he won't be able to feed his family. Just tell him it was. Every time I come back, I'm not kidding. I come back. How was your match? It was the best match I ever had in my life. Because 9 out of 10 times, they didn't watch it.
So, except for one time we did a show. It was, I don't know what it was. It was some show in Tennessee or something like that. And the second match was probably like a battle royal. I don't know if you remember this. It was a battle royal and it was atrocious. It was horrible. These guys were just, I mean, they're just playing wrestling in the ring. It was horrible. So then I watched it and my eyes were rolling like, oh my God. So you pulled all the guys aside and you said, hey guys, come here. And I thought you were going to give them drop some wisdom on them. You know, everybody from the battle royal, come over here, please. Everybody from the battle royal, come over here and sit down, please. Everybody came over there and I thought, you know, like you were going to, you know, explain what they did wrong and stuff. And you said, okay, everybody here in the battle royal, you should kill yourselves right now. That was the worst thing I've ever seen. And you walked away.
Who said this?
You said this.
I did. Okay.
Oh,
okay.
Brother, it was so awesome. I've done it. I laughed. Yeah. I laughed my ass off. It was good.
Oh yeah. Then, I did that. That was horrible.
No, it was,
but I was ribbing,
but
you
it
know,
was, yeah, I get it. No, totally. Hey, Matt,
but so I always tell the boys that I'm sorry. That. So no, when you come back and promoter asks you, how is your match? The best match you ever had. Cause he didn't watch
it. Amazing. It was amazing.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Charles.
No. So, hey, so we're starting to wind down here, but you know, one thing that I do on suplexes and cervices is I do this rapid fire questions, and it's kind of nothing right, nothing wrong, no right or wrong answer, just for your fans to kind of get to know you a little bit better. Are you game? You want to play?
Okay. I'm ready.
All right. So definitely some that I ask a lot of wrestlers because we're always on the road. So were you a Cracker Barrel guy or a Waffle House guy?
I'm a Waffle House guy. Still
Waffle
am.
House. Yeah, I hear you.
Oh, okay. Yes. Still am. Going to a lot of territories. I mean, not territories, but shows.
Yeah.
The guy, the money man, is taking you out to eat. Where you want to go? I'm in the mood for a waffle.
Waffle House, exactly.
Hell yeah. It's always open and it's always hot.
Right. Okay, who was the better champ? Was it Ric Flair or Harley Race?
Ric Flair.
Ric Flair, wow. Okay. Who's tougher?
Oh, can I explain it?
Absolutely, please do.
You know, I had the chance to work with both of them. Harley was a bumping world champion. Ric Flair, he gave the people the money's worth no matter what. And I'm there. I'm living proof of it.
Right.
If you didn't go an hour with him, you went 58 minutes every night. You know, me and Rick went 17 straight hour matches every day. And then next 7 days, we went an hour and a half.
Wow.
But this is what I want to try to tell you. And it's hard. And I want everybody that's out there that's a wrestler to know this. To walk out in the Charlotte Coliseum, I'm the baby face. I just did this angle with Flair, and Flair is the god there. Mm-hmm. You walk out, and the people, you got the little girls cheering for us, but the wrestling fans are cheering for Ric Flair.
That's right.
We're supposed to go an hour in the match. Okay. 10 minutes in that match, he's done turned everybody in that building. They're throwing stuff. 15 minutes in the match, they done pushed the guardrails up to the ring.
Mm-hmm.
I'm bleeding. I'm selling. I see Arn Anderson. I see Robert. They come down. I'm taking bumps into the ropes, knocking the marks off the ring. I'm saying, and Ric Flair tells me, he says, I'm going to throw you over the top rope, but land on your feet and go straight to the top turnbuckle. That way people can see me. You understand? Mm-hmm. He said, when you do that, I got to slide out this back way here. Mm-hmm. They're going to kill me. Yeah. And we did. I had to check. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. No, they're okay. Masters.
But you see, that, and that's what I'm talking about. Don't get me wrong. Harley was great.
Right.
But Ric Flair was, to me, was the greatest world champ because he understood it and he played that role, buddy, and he lived that role. That's just what, my opinion.
I agree. Yeah. I hear you. Okay, so who's tougher? Now, there was tough guys back there, but was it Danny Hodge or Dickie Slater?
Danny Hodge.
Nice. Yeah.
Okay, now the reason why, you know, Dickie Slater was a one-punch guy.
Right.
You hear me?
Yeah.
He punched you. I seen him knock Zoom out fucking out, bro. You know, he had that one punch, you know. Yeah. And that's it. Let me tell you, 99% of the toughest people in the world, one punch. If you get that first punch in, means a lot more.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Then run like a son of a bitch. But I don't. Danny, did you ever meet Danny Hodge?
Yes, sir.
You ever shake hands with him?
I did. He did not kill me, thank God. But what a nice guy.
I was a
nice guy, really guy, such mild manner. My dad'd be like, okay, he's the killer. He's an Olympic wrestler, a Golden Gloves champion. He could, you know,
never lost a match.
Lost a match. Would he told me the stuff with the pliers, would break pliers with his grips, and you know,
yes,
all that stuff. Yeah,
Dick Slater was a brawler, but see,
right.
Danny Hodge was a brawler, but he didn't show it any. I was in Tulsa, Oklahoma, maybe 15 years ago, and Danny had a little beer joint, and I went down to see him, and he was sitting in there, and I'm sitting on up at the bar. Me and Danny are talking, and this guy walks up and goes, "Hey, them people back here said you one of them fake wrestlers."
Ooh.
Hey, look here. Danny Hodge stand, you listen, man. He says, "Oh, hi, how you doing?" And Danny stuck his hand out, and this guy dropped straight to the floor. He spun him around and put the sleeper on him. Boom, like that. This, in a matter of 30 seconds, this guy shit and peed all over himself. He's laying here on the floor, out.
Yeah.
That was the 30 seconds I went, you know, I mean, geez, who you think's the toughest?
Okay,
go ahead.
Okay, so we just talked about your vintage or vintage car or a new car guy.
Vintage car. I'm an old car guy.
Okay, cool. Cars or trucks?
Cars. But it's hard to answer. I like cars because I travel a lot. But I got both.
I got a
truck and a car too. 56 Nomad.
Oh, do you? Nice. Really?
A 66 Chevelle. I got cars, buddy.
I love it.
I got a 66 Super Sport 396, all original, 27,000 miles on it.
Original
paint
miles?
Job. And yes.
Wow. Wow.
Oh, yes. That's nice. Yeah, buddy. That's go nice. Ahead.
Are you blondes or brunettes?
Blondes.
Blondes.
That's it. We just want to have fun. Well, I can say gray now, but
were you a Tyson or Ali guy?
I was an Ali guy.
Ali.
Got a picture of him on my wall. Had pleasure to meet the greatest man I ever met in my life to shake hands with. And I'm telling you that, Muhammad Ali. It's like when I shook his hand, lightning went through me.
Really?
And the nicest guy, you know, this is in the Superdome in Louisiana. And he comes, let me tell you, man, he comes in, what a guy, shook hands with him and just talking to him. And my son, my oldest son now that's 39, he was in the floor playing with some cars. Muhammad Ali sat right down beside him. Now here come in Bill Watts and all them. And Bill Watts walks up and says, "I'm Bill Watts, I'm the promoter." And Muhammad Ali looked up at him and goes, "Oh, you're the one that steals all these guys' money, huh?" I like to die. But no, what a good guy, Muhammad. Yeah. He's the greatest living man I ever met in my life, Muhammad Ali was.
Wow.
You know, that's huge. Huge.
That's huge.
Yes.
That's huge. That's beautiful. That's a great story. Are you a vodka or tequila guy?
Tequila.
tequila. Me too.
Mace my clothes. Oh,
it's true, right?
Yes. Hey, anywhere you go, drink tequila, it might be naked.
Right? That's true. I know. Yes. I know. I'm the same way. Were you a Led Zeppelin guy or Leonard Skinner guy?
I was really a Leonard Skinner guy.
Leonard Skinner, good guy.
That's Southern rock. Southern guy. I know them all.
I know. They're good guys. That
yes.
Ricky Metlock, good dude.
Oh, yes, dude. There.
Big Ricky, yeah. Yeah. Okay. And two tough girls, two tough chicks out there. Was it, were you Moolah or Sherry Martel?
Now, who'd you say first?
Moolah, Great Moolah or Sherry Martel?
Oh, Moolah.
Moolah. Yeah, she was tough, yeah. Right?
I knew. Damn Kim. Right. Yeah, yeah. Hey, I was back in her days. Okay. Yeah. I've been in bars with her too, boys and not. Hell, she's standing right there with the boys and fist fight them all too, buddy.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
I love Moolah. She was my friend.
Yeah, she was. I met her. She was good friends with my grandfather. Met her when I was younger. I think I was maybe 14 or something. She came in someplace and introduced me to her. My grandfather introduced me to her. That was really cool. Cool to meet such a legend, you know?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I love Moolah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Matt, so where can anybody find you nowadays? What do you?
You can find me everywhere. I'm on Facebook, Ricky Morton. I'm on Facebook, School of Morton. Remember, I have a YouTube show. It comes on every Sunday live from my school. You hardly ever see me on it. Somehow I come out and thank the people, but it's for my students at my school. And not only do I teach professional wrestling, I got everything there. Teach you how to run the cameras, do this, I'm not the best interview guy, but I have people that come in to do all that. Nice. I have kids that come in. I get a lot of heat from Cornette about that, but understand me. I take kids and change their life. And I'm going to give you an example of one here. A kid that came to me had cerebral palsy. Mm-hmm. He wanted to join my school. Okay. He's overweight. Didn't go to school. And when his mama brought him to me, she's in the background doing this. No, don't let him sign. And I looked at him. I could see something, even though he's got cerebral palsy. Sure. I says, you want to join my school? And he said, yeah. I said, damn right you can. But I brought him in and I took my time with him. Mm-hmm. He lost like right around 80 pounds.
Wow.
He went from being bullied at school to the guy wears the thing around straight A's. He got a 4-year scholarship to college.
Valedictorian.
Valedictorian, sure did. Wow. Okay, now he lost 80 pounds. He learned how to work out. And if you could adjust yourself to him, you could have a hell of him and Chase Owens used to have a hell of a match together.
Really?
And he had several. And see, this arm and this leg was smaller, but I just covered it up.
Yeah.
I gave him a long sleeve to put on this one and this, and you couldn't hardly tell it. But the best thing about this, and I hope when I say this, don't take this wrong, but he got his first taste of some nookie.
Yes.
His whole fucking life changed.
Absolutely. Okay. Good for him.
See, that's what I teach, man.
Yeah.
You know, and I do. Don't ever give up. I was like that. Man, I broke in the business. You don't think I was bullied? You'll never make it. You're too small.
We all heard that.
You'll never go here. This and that and that. And that's that's the words that I live by.
Yeah.
You know, dude. And so thank you for asking that, but go ahead.
No, that's great, man.
The more Twitter, Real Ricky Morton.
Twitter, Real Ricky Morton. What are you on
Real screen? Ricky Morton. Ricky Morton.
Ricky Morton.
I got to ask myself. I don't know.
So many social media stuff out there. Brother, man, yes. I can tell you this. It's been such a pleasure talking with you, man. It was like sitting under the learning tree. I love it. Every time we get together and have a beer or two, I can sit there and talk.
Yes. But you know what, Chavo, it's just knowing what a pleasure in life it was for me to know your dad, Hector, and Armando. I never met your grandfather, but all them. And remember, too, we used to talk about me, you sitting in the bar drinking that night. I was messing with you all night long.
Right,
I don't know if you remember that. I'm fucking with you.
Yeah,
and you tell me, you done told me that 20 times. But that, and then I'd wait and I'd do it again. And I'd see you go, I was just messing with you. You know,
I love it, man. That's one thing I'd love is getting with you guys. It's getting with all you call the old timers, but the guys that been there, you know, it's
like, hey, what a time we had down at Luke Gallows. Oh, I had a hell of a time that day. Man, I got drunk.
Yeah.
I got drunk. I did this, me and my boy. My son was, that was a good time for my son to meet some and really live their environment of the boys.
Yeah.
You know, because they was all, everybody was doing their thing. He was shooting over here, you shooting over here. And,
right.
And all you guys, and we all meet in the middle, burned up here. I'm sitting there, and here comes Elvis Presley out the door. I think that was Heath Slater. What he was dressed up like. Presley and Robert. See, Robert don't know. I said, Robert, you know that boy. I don't know what kind of gimmick. See, I said, that's Heath Slater. He ain't going out. Great. I love the, always remember this, Chavo. I love the boys in this business.
Yeah, I agree.
I love the boys that understand our business and realize that it, even if you're out there and you're trying to break in, this, how hard it is, but don't never let nobody tell you you can't live your dream. Life's about dreams.
I agree.
It's, you know,
I've met a lot of successful people, and every time I meet one of those successful persons, never once did that person tell me you can't do it, or you won't make it. Those successful people, those are the ones that are telling you can make it, because people used to tell them they couldn't make it and they made it. So
no, sir.
The ones that tell you can't do it, those are the haters. Those are the ones sleeping on their mom's couch. Those are the ones that they never made it themselves. But anybody who's been there, they'll be positive that you can make it.
Yeah, I got you. It on social media too, you know. I
agree.
People,
that's right,
say bad things, but I always tell Robert and I tell everybody, never say nothing back. Never say nothing back.
Block. I just put block.
Yes, never say nothing back. There's the ones that don't understand.
That's true.
And it, you know, and every mark you meet, they say no, everything about our business.
That's true.
And then when you sit there and talk to them for 30 seconds, you realize they don't know shit.
They don't,
they don't know nothing. I'm sorry about my language if I got
out of place. Good.
But,
no, you're good, brother.
But I stand up for that. And I love the boys. I love you. Love your family. And thank you for being a part of my life.
Likewise, brother. Thank you so much for being on the podcast, man. It was such a pleasure just talking to you. And like I said, that was a learning tree right there. That's a highlight of my day, brother.
So thank you, Chavo. Mine too. You have a good day, my friend.
You too, brother. Keep in touch, man. And I'm here anytime you need me.
All right. Me too. Bye, bud.
Bye, buddy.